Hello, guys, and welcome back to the Perfect Hat-Trick Podcast. I'm your host, Taron. I'm back again with another episode on the podcast. It's been a while, but I'm back again making this exclusive content for you guys, keeping you all entertained. I know the international break is just finishing, and it's a bit rude of me. I didn't release any content during that, but we're back in the good stuff, the club football, and I'm Gaston. Today, I actually have one of my most, I say, interesting podcasts I've ever recorded. I'm really, really excited to get to the bottom of this topic, and who better to ask then Chelsea FC YouTuber Alan. Let's talk ball with Alan. Alan, I've been waiting to have this conversation with you for ages. I've seen you on streams, I've seen you on the live chat, and I've always wanted to speak to you. I think your views are really kind of, I say, balanced and really kind of knowledgeable, and I'm just really happy to have you on. So, Alan, would you like to say anything? How are you happy to be on the podcast? A bit about your channel, anything you'd like to say?
First of all, I just wanted to say thank you so much for having me on. I'm a big fan of this podcast and I'm a big fan of the work you do, whether it's on streams or on Twitter. You have a really good base right now and you're building it, and I wish you all the best. We have a very good topic to discuss today, a topic that we can go on and on about, and I'm very excited to talk about this today. I am a Chelsea YouTuber. I did do some videos for Chelsea right now. I'm afraid that has gone down a bit. Hopefully sometime soon I'll be able to post consistently again. But right now I'm just very happy to be here and discuss the club that we all love and how we play.
Yeah, and the international break, very quickly before we move on to the first topic. Are you a big advocate of the international break? I know most people will kind of say, you know, we hate the international break, but do you like watching your country play? Do you like watching the different kind of, you know, big European victories? Or are you just waiting, checking your watch every 5 minutes, checking to see when the Chelsea will be back in action?
I'm waiting for Chelsea to be back in action. I understand the point of some international breaks. I mean, you need to have these qualifiers, but the frequency and every time they come around, I just get so bored with them. And I honestly hope that they can find a solution for this, because I'm honestly just waiting for Chelsea to come back and play again during these weeks.
Exactly. That's how I feel. So I'm an England fan. It's very painful to watch Gareth Southgate, you know, put out these teams on a daily. It's just like low block FC. I cannot be asked. But I think it's fair to say we should get into the first topic of this particular stream. I don't actually think I mentioned what we're actually going to be talking about, but, you know, I'll mention that right now. We're going to be discussing the 3-4-3 formation that Thomas Tuchel puts out for Chelsea, how it is unique. We're not kind of going to be comparing it to Inter Milan's and Wolves and other teams, but we'll be talking about how this team has been so unique in the way it sets up, the different dimensions in the attack, midfield, the defence, and why we won the Champions League. And it's such an effective unit we have going on. So let's get straight into the first topic. And this is simply flexibility. And purely for the fact that we can have two inverted forwards against low blocks to create overloads in the middle and cause defenders havoc, you know, drag them out of positions. We can put two strikers against high lines, you know, Vernon, Ziyech against Liverpool, for example. There's so many ways to adapt to different circumstances where, you know, I think in seasons, it is massive to have this kind of flexibility. And Alan, I wanted to ask you, how important do you think it is that title winning teams can adapt to many in-game and out-of-game situations?
I want to start with talking about Tuchel's approach to games. Is that the way that I saw it when he first took over is that he doesn't have one game plan that he goes to. He usually tells the other manager, show me your cards and I'm going to beat you in game. Is that the way we approach each game, we could line up at the beginning of a game with a 3-4-3, 10 minutes in, it's a 3-4-2-1, another 10 minutes, it's a 3-4-1-2, a 3-5-2, a 5-3-2. We change so often that it becomes very hard to predict. The other teams can't find a way to break through or to expect what's going to come from us, because we adapt our game to how other teams are playing and what's needed in that game, whether we need to go forward more or we need to defend more or play on the counter. And I think that's very important, because you need to have different approaches to each game. Each game cannot be played the same way. So having that in our arsenal, having that as a card that we can play in game, is going to be very crucial for our title race this season.
I agree, and I'm not trying to dig out Maurizio Sarri, but we did feel in that particular era, it was strictly one system, and no matter if we were losing, you know, 6-0 to Man City, it would still be the same particular kind of system, and it did get quite frustrating, and we kind of saw, as fans, we need to tweak this here, we need to overload this hand side, we need to add an extra striker on, take a midfielder out of that midfield three, but never really happened. With Thomas Tuchel, I'm going to use the Man City game that we played away at the Etihad as an example. We won 2-1. You could see at the start of the game, Man City were just getting the better of so many different occasions, but Tuchel tweaked that mid-game and it came out with getting the better and we won 2-1. And it was such a great situation that game. And, you know, just to kind of piggyback on this topic as well, I just think what I said about the two inverted forwards against the low blocks and two strikers against the high line, Tuchel knows and he adapts the game so well, even before games. He's always one step ahead of the other managers in kind of saying, against Liverpool, he puts Timo Werner to start. Against Man City, he puts Werner to start again. Against maybe a low block, he'd put, you know, maybe Ziyech on or something. So it is really crucial even before the game that Tuchel is nailing on these kind of tactics, right?
Absolutely. Is that he has something in mind before each game. He studies the opponents in such a way. He highlights their weaknesses. He sort of predicts how they're going to play before we start. He knows what he wants to target. And thankfully, we're lucky with the amount of players we have, is that each player can play a certain role. And no matter what the approach is for a game, we have the player that suits the role that is defined for him for that game. We prepare in training before the match. Tuchel knows what he wants. But the, also another thing that he has, Tuchel, who is brilliant, is that even if he prepares and by some way or another during game, it turns out not to be working, he can just flip it in an instant and we're back in control of a game. Just like you said, we might be out in the first half or in the first few minutes or whatever, but in the second half or after a while, he changes it up even the slightest way and we're back in control. We're back on the way to win. That's absolutely a brilliant weapon to have for us. We're very lucky to have Tuchel, honestly.
For real. And, you know, even like I said before, in different game situations, maybe a few times West Brom, that's a very, very strange anomaly, in my opinion. But
we don't talk about that game.
Yeah. Well, who are West Brom? Who's Callum Robinson? I actually don't know anymore. But, you know what I mean? It's just incredible to see that we have such an adaptive manager. Even Jose Mourinho, I don't think, was this kind of game, adaptable mid-game. And I think in a title race, when you have a manager who's flexible, different kind of scenarios, overloads, different situations, it really blows your mind. But yeah, we've talked about the flexibility. I think we've dug into that quite deeply. Let's go into...
I just wanted to highlight more about the flexibility, is that what also helps us is that we have players in-game that can change how we play. I think Mason Mount is also a very important factor in that. He's one of the players that can serve as a catalyst for change, is that usually he's the one changing positions. If we started in a 3-4-2-1 where he's one of the inside forwards, you can see him very often joining to make a midfield three, turning it into maybe a 3-5-2. Mason Mount can be that player to change roles within game. I just wanted to highlight that because a lot of the times we consider Mason as a part of our attacking team, one of our forwards, which he is a lot of the times, but also in other parts of the game, we can see him taking a step back and helping out in midfield, doing some of the dirty work, which he can do.
I agree. He's definitely one of the most tactically inute players in our team. Definitely. If we're getting overrun in midfield, Georgie and Kante getting a bit overrun, we can drop him in there to help out. If our attack is a bit lackluster, he can get up there, you know, make a crazy goal against Liverpool, do something insane. And it's beautiful to see. And yeah, that was a great point. Again, thank you for highlighting that, Aaron. But let's kind of talk about the wing backs now. I think it is crucial to talk about this particular topic because, in my opinion, the best thing about a three at the back system is always the wing backs. And I think the main factor of the wing backs in our team is the balance is just perfect. With three at the back systems, you think there's usually two attacking wing backs, two defensive. It gets a bit boring defensively. Look at Newcastle with Steve Bruce. Look at kind of more attacking wing back systems. You look at Nelson Semedo and Ryan Aitnori. They're very, very attacking. But we usually have one that can defend very solidly, like Reece James, and one that's literally playing as a striker, like Chilwell in the CL final, like Alonso. Actually, Chilwell's a bit more defensive, but he did make them, you know, big key forward runs. And I just think it is beautiful to see. So my question for you is, do you think the wing-backs are that perfect attacking option, you know, that nobody realises? For example, you've got Mason Mount at the game, you've got Lukaku, then you see Marcus Alonso coming in at the back post and banging one in. So I just wanted to get your thoughts on that.
In my opinion, when you play a three in the back system, the wing backs can be the most important position in game. Is that I'm going to use Pep Guardiola right now, the historic video, the so wide part of the video, is that in our build-up play, I'm going to start from the back and then see how they join in attack, is that we have those central options in those three defenders, whoever is starting, and we have Jorginho dropping in deep. So we do have those central options. But if we are playing against a good pressing team, We do have the option to go out wide by the formation of some diamonds. Tuchel loves his diamonds. If you can imagine it with me right now, we have one very big diamond. You can see it consisting of the middle center back, the two wing backs on the sides, and the striker at top. And then in game, we also have two diamonds on the sides, consisting of the right center back, the right wing back, the right center and midfielder, and the right winger. And the same thing on the left, if you shift it. Having those diamonds, the wing backs can be key in those diamonds because they offer us width, they offer us an escape. If there's a shift in play, we can shift it to them. We have players that can play diagonal passes. So this way we can escape the press. Now going forward, having those players, I mean, as you said, we can have them both join the attack. Sometimes we line up in a 3-2-5 in game. Sometimes we can have them both join the attack. Or sometimes our wing backs are capable of staying back and helping out in defense, depending on what is needed. I mean, Reece James, we talk about his crossing all the time. Chilwell has a decent cross in him as well. Marcus Alonso, I mean, he's practically a striker at times. I mean, whoever decided to play him as a left back or something, I mean, that guy's a criminal. I mean, he could have had a great career as a striker, but so we have those options going forward, but we can also see how solid they are defensively and how quick we transition when we lose the ball into a back five system, having Reece James or Chilwell or whoever's playing, honestly, join that back five, making us even harder to break down. Another thing that we have an option of is when we play Callum Hudson-Odoi, he may start on paper as a right wing back, but in game, he's very much a right winger. And in the future, I can see this happening. I don't know when, but I'm pretty confident. I think we will be seeing Christian Pulisic starting in that right wing back role as well. I think that can happen. I think that's something Tuchel wants. He wanted a player on the right who can take players on. I think Pulisic can be that guy, offering us an extra outlet in attack. So wing backs can be our main source of creativity while also not compromising us at the back when we need to defend. It's a very important part of a back three system.
You made some excellent points there. You know, I'll kind of piggyback on this a little bit and some of the points you made. First of all, I think the two key points of wing-backs for me are, first of all, in the build-up play, when Rudiger, you know, is pressed quite high up, you always see Alonso Chilwell dropping deep and trying to release the pressure, trying to win throw-in, trying to win, you know, trying to swing the ball with his right foot sometimes. And Reece James is the same as well for Aspi. I was going to say Koundé there, for Aspi and Chalobah. And
in January.
Yeah, well, let's release it in January. But yeah, I say the second key point I say is they really benefit the inverted forwards a lot. If they're holding the width and engaging the fullbacks maybe or someone else, it leaves a lot more space for the two inverted forwards to free roam and Mason Mount to really show his creative freedom, show Kai Havertz to free roam and he loves the space, and Timo Werner to engage his space at times, and Lukaku to do amazingly well in different positions. So I just think it's such a good dimension to have in the team. If you have just normal fullbacks in a forward-back system, I wouldn't say it's the same kind of dimensions going forward and defensively as you leave spaces for the two centre-backs, you know, spaces as we saw.
Absolutely.
For Kurt Zouma and a lot of different occasions. So I just think it's such a key part of this team. And that's why wing-backs are such a key feature. When Antonio Conte came in, it really blew my mind to see Alonso kind of being an inverted striker from left-back, and seeing Victor Moses kind of being that take-on player. So I think it is a real key picture. And I just want to get your thoughts before we move on to the next kind of topic on this particular podcast. For this season, we've seen Alonso play amazingly well. Obviously, he started off in the Player of the Month discussion for August. Reece James had a very, very, apart from Liverpool game, a very decent start. And Chilwell, he hasn't even played yet. So I want to get your thoughts. What would you play for that Aston Villa game as your pivot? And I'm going to be releasing this on the day of the game, so it's okay. Forget about Aston Villa's kind of fullbacks and how we will attack them. Who would you prefer to play in that game? And what about the dimensions of those two combinations work that you like?
All right, that's a bit of a tricky question right now because in my mind, my first thing that came to mind is that Aston Villa have a lot of players right now that we don't know if they're going to be available or not. But right now, I'm going to consider this approach as who I want to be starting if we are playing the strongest team of all time or whatever, because they usually come up against us in these situations. Right now, based on current form, I know Reece James is injured, but he would be my first choice. Right now, on current form, I'd have Azpilicueta start as that wing back and Alonso as that left wing back. Azpilicueta, he has been played in that position before. I think Tuchel likes him. Azpilicueta, although a lot of people bash down on his attacking output, I think he does a decent job attacking. The more important part of it is that he's one of the best 1v1 defenders we have, or in the league, honestly. So he can offer us that, as well as he's a very smart runner. He makes those runs, whether they're overlapping or they're underlapping, he makes those runs. And starting on the left wing back position is Alonso, because he had a very good start to the season. It would be a shame to see him drop. He wasn't on international break. He trained with the squad, so he's fit. And I just want to see him continue that form. But it's a long season. All of our wing backs are going to play a role. Chilwell, he hasn't been appearing much, but I think his time will come. I think on form, he's our best left wing back. I don't think we should be talking about it that much. But right now for this game, I'll go with Azpilicueta and Alonso. How about you?
Yeah, I've made a preview on Twitter as well, and I did put Alonso and Azpilicueta. A lot of people are calling for Hudson-Odoi, but I just don't think Tuchel fancies Hudson-Odoi. And in the chances he's getting right now, we think about the Villarreal game, I wouldn't say he was great in that game, and he needs to be taking his chances with those competition. I'd like to see him play left inverted forward, whether it's the Aston Villa game, the Carabao Cup, the Zenit, obviously not the Zenit game, but I would like to see him that. I don't think the right wing back role complements his abilities, but I would like to see him with Romelu Lukaku. That is just my opinion. Like,
that could be
the amount of crosses he puts into the box, it could be good. But yeah, Alonso, I did kind of mention his connection with Saúl Ñíguez could be quite important. We know Saúl Ñíguez is a left footer. And them two were going out biking in like London together. Was it Alonso? It was Alonso, Kepa, and
Kepa. Yeah.
Was that a joke? I don't understand. Was that a joke he put on? He tagged Alonso, didn't he? Was it a joke or was it a kind of?
I think it's an inside joke between the Spaniards.
Why is he putting that on Instagram? They put it on the WhatsApp group. Oh my god! But I just I think it is a really nice. I think it's an excellent combination on the left. It could be. We know Saúl Ñíguez is left footed, so I'm excited to see a left footed midfielder with Alonso. But yeah. I do agree with the Azpilicueta and Alonso for this game. And like you said, Azpilicueta is a very good wing back in my opinion. I didn't think I'd be saying this with his aging, kind of, you know, his age going up and up. He's not getting younger. His legs, they don't seem like they're going to me. Is that fair to say? But I just think he's so intelligent that he knows when
to run. It's fair to say, yes. Mm-hmm. But as you said, he is very intelligent and he knows how to read the game and position himself, where pace is not a factor anymore. We've seen it. I mean, beginning of the Tuchel takeover last season, we were going up against the likes of Rashford and other fast players. At first, I was afraid because Azpilicueta was away from the starting 11 at times. But he showed that he can read the game perfectly and position himself. He's aware of what he's doing and he can stop the game no matter how fast the player ahead of him is. So I have no fears in that regard right now.
For sure, for sure. I do agree with you. And yeah, I do think to kind of cap off the wing backs, I like to say the wing backs are a real, real diamond in this formation working. But if we need to talk about this later, we can talk about this. But let's talk about the double pivot. Now, we mentioned Saúl Ñíguez be able to play there. But I think in this system, it's such a unique, you know, double pivot combination. We've seen Antonio Conte's Matic was much different to the way our pivot is now. Their main job in this team is to win the ball back, to recycle possession. Most importantly, do not give that ball away in such dangerous, critical areas, as Tuchel says. Control the tempo. Be the train conductors of that team. I just think it's so unique to anything I've ever seen before, how much we rely on that pivot in build-up play and overall. So I want to ask you a very simple question. Well, you can expand on it and make it not simple. How would you summarize the job of the pivot in Thomas Tuchel's 3-4-3 system?
That's a good question. If you see me going on for a bit too long, just tell me to stop because we can go on for days about this. But the way I see it is that I'm going to skip the part of the build-up because they do play a very important role in the build-up. I'm going to say that when we have possession and when we're trying to attack, we usually resemble a 3-2-5 formation. The 3-2-5 formation is having three center backs, which is normal, and the double pivot, the two pivot players, and then having the wing backs join the front three to make a front five. But the double pivot in this situation is very important for Tuchel. He has, I'm going to call it a 5-5 philosophy, where he wants five players attacking and five players ready to defend, or five players on the ball and five players off the ball. And the way that this pivot sets up for us right now, and I think it's going to change with the addition of Saúl, but for the previous season, recycling possession was a very big part of their game. Keeping the ball, they helped us in defending in a lot of ways. Number one, by keeping the ball. we're not going to defend if we have the ball and we're attacking. So keeping the ball is a very important part of their game, as well as protecting the back three. They're the first line of defense on a very fast counter. Jorginho is very smart at intercepting balls. Kante is everywhere. He reads the game so well. He knows where to be. Kovacic does a very good job as well. Saul's going to be a very hard worker coming from a Simeone system as well. So defensively, that's their roles. They also, we haven't been seeing it enough, relying on them for goals or assists, but it hasn't been their role right now. Mostly, it's just recycling possession, controlling the tempo, having us being in control of the game, and just giving us a chance to have our front players be creative, giving them the freedom to move and to create, and just saying, I've got this. If you lose the ball, we're not going to concede the counter. We'll give it back to you.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. I thought you were going to go on, you know, a bit more there, but, you know, I can ask a question.
I can if you want.
Let's go. No, we have all day. Well, not all day, but continue.
All right. Now, I said it was going to change. The dynamic is going to change with Saul coming in, because Saul does have the attacking essence that maybe our other midfielders don't, or not at his level, let's say. I mean, they do have it in their arsenal, but they don't use it very much. But Saul, I think he's going to offer us, I mean, first thing that comes to mind is his goal against Bayern Munich. That dribbling goal he scored. He's a very good dribbler and he's a very good shooter of the ball, and he can pick out some good balls. I think that having him in the team is going to offer us something different, whether he starts or he comes off the bench. I think that's going to be very important to have. And it's another thing that's going to make us even more unpredictable and harder to prepare against and harder to defend against, is that we're going to be adding another player that can possibly create or score from afar. We haven't been seeing a lot of long shots. We don't need to. I mean, I'm just nitpicking right now, but we don't see those long shots a lot. And I think Saul has that in his, he can do this. So I think it's going to change, and he's still going to have the protection and the balance of the players behind him and ahead of him.
Excellent point. I think what Sal does, probably not to the same extent as Georgie, Kovar, Kante, but he can do those things to a very high element. But also what we were lacking last season, whether we want to say it or not, was goals from midfield. And you never know, those 3, 4, 5, 6 Premier League goals could take us from second place to first place, if you think about it in the long run. And could win us a game from 1-1 in the last minute. A goal from Sal can make it 2-1. You know, Kovacic is shooting. Whether he's worked with like the best goal scoring midfielder the club's ever seen, it doesn't look like. You know, some players have it and some players don't. It's fair enough to say, unless Kovacic is doing the Ronaldo and staying off the training 4 or 5 hours and just taking free kicks alone, I don't think he personally wants to work on that part of his game too much. I don't think it's much a worry for him right now. But Sal has it naturally. You know, when I play football, I'm awful at shooting. I'm a midfielder. I'm happy to admit that. But I will try and work on it, but I'm never going to be natural at it. But Sal does look like he has that in his armory, and it is lovely to see. And with that added, again, like all I'm saying, like over and over again, is more different dimensions to the system.
Absolutely.
Different dimensions happening, different kind of ways of scoring, assisting, creating overloads, worrying opposition defences. And I definitely agree with you. The double pivot overall, I think defensively, we know how they play. They always want to recycle possession. The main thing is not to lose the ball. Like you said, the more we have the ball, the less we can be done on transitions, the less we can be done with, you know, our backs to goal and kind of teams just attacking us over and over again. And I just think it's key. But I want to ask you about...
And even when we're defending, I'm sorry, I just jumped in. Even when defending, is that they occupy the central space, which is usually... in front of the back five, they usually occupy that space. They're shifting according to play, but they're ready to jump in, because that's a very dangerous area to concede a shot or to concede a chance, is that they occupy that space very well in the center of the pitch. They can make it crowded, and they can make a player uncomfortable taking a chance from there, creating or shooting. That's another part where they come in defensively.
For sure. Yeah, there's no worries. That is a great point as well, that any moment when we need them to jump in, their great positional awareness in that system, the knowing of where to be, when to be, it is a great asset to have as well. I think I was going to kind of ask you just then was about N'Golo Kante and his long-time fitness issues. It's not really to do with this particular system, but I think to do with Tuchel's system, you know, N'Golo Kante is a player in Tuchel's system, it is to do with the same topic. So I just wanted to ask you about Kante's long-time fitness issues. We've seen, you know, he's picked up an injury against Liverpool. It does seem like it's becoming an issue now for me. And do you think it's time to maybe look at offloading Kante to maybe a Real Madrid where we can get the best out of them, similar to Eden Hazard? I'd say him the asset, look to rebuild in that position, get a lot of money, and look to use the money that we, you know, when we got Hazard, when we sold Hazard, we used the money next summer to buy Timo Werner and all these other kind of key players. So I want to ask you, do you think it's time to you know, maybe ship off Kante due to these problems, or would you want him to kind of stay at the club and develop more and just become a real, you know, legend and kind of a John Terry kind of figure?
It's always an option. You always have that option of offloading a player when you can get the best price. But right now, I think Kante is one of a kind. There isn't a player like him. You can't replace him this season or the season after. It's going to take some time to replace him, whether we all want to admit it or not. He's one of a kind, and he offers us a lot of things that many midfielders can't. He does have some weaknesses, but our system does hide almost every player's weaknesses, which is something Tuchel has done greatly. But speaking of injuries, it has become a nagging issue. And I would say I'm not worried right now. I would have been worried if we didn't sign Saul or another midfielder in the transfer window. But right now we have protection. My game plan for N'Golo Kante, and tell me if you agree with me or not, is right now having him, using him for the big matches, using him when needed, and nothing more. Other than that, keeping him fit, having him train. He's a nice guy to be around, having him on the training pitch, raising that morale. Right now, for this season, it's to have him for the big games, because we can't replace him in those big games. He's basically two midfielders in one when he plays. Mm. We don't have anyone that can do what he does. So it's to keep him fit. We have Saul, Jorginho, and Kovacic we can rotate right now. We can use Kante when needed, not more, not less. But right now, keep him and then look for a replacement. I wouldn't sell Kante. I'd like to keep him at the club. Have him mold the replacement into the next Kante. Have him have the new player, whoever it may be. I'm not going to name names right now. Whoever it may be, to learn from Kante, to get the best out of Kante, whether it's Kante telling him or showing him. I think that's the best approach for him right now.
Yeah, I'll kind of say my thoughts now quickly. I 100% agree in the fact that you want him to play the big games. We've seen the impact he's had in the CL final, the Real Madrid games, the Liverpool game away. Even in the first half, how good was he in that Liverpool game in the first half, you know, a few weeks ago. So I do agree to that factor, but I just don't think it's natural to have a player just play the big games, the big 12 games for one season. Then when he's thrown into them games, he might have the sharpness. Obviously, the fitness will be there, but the match sharpness is not quite there to just jump into this high intensity game without playing the amount of minutes. So I think we can balance it out. If we need him to play, maybe look to play less games if that's possible. We can't be overloaded. Say if we have a game every 3 days, similar, I'd say, to how we played with Thiago Silva last season. And I know he's a 37-year-old, but I think Kante's injuries are becoming a worry. And the last thing I want is him to be picking up injuries for these big games that we have coming up and missing the key fixtures. So maybe if we're playing maybe a Norwich at home or something, or a CL game at home against who's that team in our group that's not great. Just trying to think about Malmo, fine, I got it. Malmo, maybe you play Georgie and Koval, Georgie Sal, and I do agree with you. But I do want him to play not just the big games. I want him to play the Everton's, the Leicester's, the mid-tier games, the Arsenal's, the games that matter. I just don't want him to play the amount of games he was thrown into last season. Last season was crazy. This all started because of the Europa League, the injury he had in the Europa League. It all kind of spiraled from there. So, yeah, I think he will be fine. I don't want him to be sold. He is my favourite player at Chelsea by quite a lot of a distance. So I think that is kind of the kind of way we should talk about that one. But yeah, I definitely don't want him to be sold. Like you said, he is irreplaceable. There's no one in world football who does the ball winning, the intelligence that he does, that he has in his brain. It is very, very hard to find. Maybe I would say Aurelien Tchouaméni in the future if I was to really say a name, but you know, he's nothing like
Kante. He has the qualities. He does have the qualities. I would like him to come. Honestly, he's one of my targets for the midfield position, and I think he can learn from Kante a lot if he stays another year. But I understand your concerns. It's a very tricky situation, but I do know that Tuchel can handle it. I think with the signing of Saul, we will be seeing Kante's workload managed better. We won't be relying on him for every game. It'll become less and less, and I think that's a good thing. We won't be seeing the nagging injuries we've been seeing. And hopefully, the France national team take it easy on him as well, because a lot of his injuries come down to that as well.
They won't. You know they don't care. Didier Deschamps does not care about you know, Chelsea and everything. Yeah. You know, many years he's not caring. But quickly, maybe one last point about this particular... I was going to say something about this. Oh, yeah. What I was going to say was, last season, obviously, we had Billy Gilmore. He's going to be world-class in the future. I have no doubts about that whatsoever. But if Kante was injured for the Real Madrid game home, I had very high doubts that it would come into Tuchel's game to risk playing Gilmore, risk his job kind of management. You know, it won't look good on the board if you're throwing in a youngster, and it's created some issues in the midfield and it's caused Upstone, the team, to kind of lose that game. But I feel with Saul, he's a world-class, he used to be a world-class player, he's getting back to that now. I think he has more trust.
He'll find that form.
Exactly. He is a big game player. He knows what it's like to play in the big games. Tuchel will feel less pressure to drop Kante and put Sal instead of Gilmore. So yeah, I agree with you. It'll be a massive, massive factor. So let's move on to the last topic. It's been a great discussion so far, but this topic is kind of brief and it's about the fluidity of our attack. We know we don't just have Lukaku striker. Mount, you stay Cam. You don't move from there. Rush or being dropped. Havertz, if you move from the right wing role, get out of the team. It's not like that at all. It is very fluid. Havertz can drift over, Mount can drift over, Lukaku can go wide, he can drop deep, he can move there. And I think this causes defenders nightmares, honestly. I'm thinking Tyrone Mings is actually having nightmares while I'm speaking right now. And Ezri Konsa, if he's fit, he's crying right now because it's so hard to keep up this fluidity in the attack. All I'm saying, again, is the different dimensions, different formations of that attack. We can go up against a four-back, a three-back, and just drift people, draw defenders out of position, open up spaces. But I want to ask you again, Alan, how you would summarize the fluidity and uniqueness compared to more strict systems?
First of all, I said it in one of my previous videos about what it takes to be part of the Tuchel front three, as I want to call it right now, is that it takes a player that is fast. You need to have pace in that front three. You need to be able to press when needed. You need to have the stamina to do it for 90 minutes. And another thing is that you need to be versatile. You need to be comfortable playing on the right, down the center, and on the left. I think that was a major reason in seeing Tammy Abraham not getting much minutes or any minutes, if we're being honest, and Giroud getting less minutes. I think it came down to that. But I do love having a fluid system because it makes us even more unpredictable. We can see is that we are a very good counter-pressing teams. When we lose the ball, we counter-press at a very good rate. But then when we are defending, we do press. It's not an overly aggressive or intense press, but we know when to press. And when we do, we know how to do it. Is that when we do that, our other players know the space that needs to be covered. They can swap positions. They can change positions. So it can help defensively where we don't leave any space in case the press goes wrong. And we can do it offensively just to confuse defenders at times and create even more space and create overloads. This is where the entire system sort of comes into one giant piece, a beautiful piece of art, where when you have the wing backs out wide in their fixed position, you need somebody to mark them. And then when you have the front three just changing positions, going all over the pitch, being fast and unable to stop them. And then you have those sometimes Azpilicueta likes to join the attack. Sometimes we see Rudiger taking that space, doing those dribbles and taking those shots, the 1% chance, 99% faith shots. But we do see it happening. And whenever they do, there's always a player that covers for them. We're not exposed. Yeah. And then attackingly, as I said, when we're just changing that, it adds another dimension to our already well-layered team. And it makes us even harder to defend against. As you said, you can see Lukaku down the center. You can see him on the right. You can see Mount jumping all over the place, whether it's on the left or in its field or in attack or on the right. Kai Havertz as well as a false nine or as a 10 or a 9.5 at times, Tuchel stated. We see them changing positions at a rate where at some point you have to question if they know they're changing positions or not, or if they know what they're doing at some point, because it can get very confusing to watch. And that's where you get happy, because it gets confusing to defend against. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I really like what you said at the start there, firstly about the pressing. And I'm going to kind of touch on that a little bit now. Say we're interchanging, Pulisic move over to the right, Lukaku somehow find himself on the left inverted for a role, and Timo Werner's found himself down the centre. This is very, very random front three, just bear with me a second. They all know where to press despite moving positions. It's not like they've been trained to just play one position. It's like a training, Tuchel has put like a machinery, kind of a conveyor belt up front. You move here, and this is how you're going to press. You all need to know in different positions where you need to press centre-back, where you need to shut passing lanes, where you need to move to the wing back. It's not like, say, teams are coming up against us and then one player's moved out to the right who's not comfortable there, even though they are. It's left a massive gap and then we've kind of conceded a chance from there. They all know where to be, when to be, despite moving all over the pitch. And I'm just thinking how Tuchel has managed this in such short time, such a well-drilled, well-oiled system, starting from the front. You know, the pressing from the front, all players mention it in interviews. we don't just defend from the back, we defend from the front, and it kind of goes from there. The press is from the front, the intensity started, and then the midfield move up, the defend move up in one working, well-oiled kind of unit. And it just, it's honestly like an opera, like a harmony.
It's mind-blowing.
It's mind, that's what I'm thinking. It's mad how Tuchel's done this. And with all this time in the summer, you know, even Abraham was saying before he kind of left in the pre-match, the post-match press for Arsenal, we are working on the press all summer. And that's making me think opposition teams
must be crying right now.
You are finished. Like I said, Tyrone Mings is with a box of tissues by his bed right now. It is mental. And yeah, I just think it's mad. Like, my mind is blurred right now, how he's managed to do this in such little time.
Absolutely.
And yeah,
I think it comes down to, number one, he's very good with man management in terms of making every player feel important. You get this vibe from the team that everyone's happy, everyone knows the rules, they feel important, it's going good. So when that happens, you get better performances on the pitch. Another thing is Tuchel's training methods are unconventional, to say the least. Is that when he sets up the training, from what I've heard, from what I've read, from what I've watched, is that he cuts up the pitch in ways where it's not the normal pitch that you see. I mean, we're used to seeing the pitch as it is. Sometimes he cuts it up in a diamond shape in training or in a circle or something like that. When you have all those different scenarios, it trains the players to manage in-game situations in training, where when everything is going in a very hard way, in an unpredictable way in training, it sort of becomes easier in game. I think he's done, now, I'm not saying that it's an easy thing to do. It's still mind-blowing to think about how he's done it, let alone how fast he's done it. He's done it, I mean, from the first game, from when he took over against Wolves, I think he had a training session in. You saw the pressing come into that game. It wasn't at the rate it is right now, but you could see it happening from the Wolves game when he first took over. So, and now that he had the entire summer, the entire preseason to work on it, if I am an opposition fan right now, I'm going to be in tears. I'm having nightmares, as you said. And it's honestly such a good sight to see.
And yeah, like you said, the Wolves game, that's what I picked up on straight away. It was the presence, even more organized. And Tuchel is, I know this is quite maybe a statement, he's German, he's been working on gegenpressing with Ralf Rangnick a lot, you know, the kind of training camp they had going on. So I think with German managers, it's such a difference to maybe a previous management team where their pressing was quite patchy at times, it left gaps, you know, certain players have been exposed. And yeah, I was going to say something as well about this particular pressing. It was a good point, but it's gone over the back of my head now. And if I can kind of think of it very quickly.
It'll come back any minute right now.
It will come back.
The Germans and their counter-pressing, I mean, it's incredible. We've seen multiple German managers who have implemented it to great success. And now Tuchel is the most recent, if you'd like to say that. Hopefully, while I'm speaking, you can sort of remember what you wanted to say.
I appreciate that. Thank you. I saw you try to do that. That was very smart. But yeah, continue.
Let me see what we're going to do right now. I think is that we still haven't reached the peak in terms of our pressing or our counter-pressing. It's only going to get better from here in terms of how Tuchel adds players to this team and how the players we already have get better and better. We have a relatively very young squad, and to see them just improve on a day-to-day basis, see them being trusted. You can't throw them into a deep end, touching on the Billy Gilmore part that you said last time, earlier on.
Yep.
You can't throw them into the deep end at once. There should be a pathway for them, but you can't have them playing a Champions League semi-final against Real Madrid in the first game of the season or something like that. But having them play, get some minutes, I think it's going to show how we are going to improve and that we are building something very special.
Exactly. And thank you for that, because I've actually thought of what I was going to say before. And this is, again, away from the fluidity of our attack. But I just say there's such a little amount of chances that we concede during games. It's a very small kind of factor. But this is kind of the epitome of the pressing and how well we are drilled. We don't concede many chances. The first few games, maybe the Arsenal game? And maybe the Villarreal game, we looked a bit disorganized, understandable, internationals, players coming back, this and that. It's understandable, you know, different players coming in. But I just think there's such a little amount of chances. You don't even see balls come over the top. It's never usually an issue. Balls to feet, balls in behind, balls to the channels. There's always a way of intercepting that and trying to find a way around that. But again, it's mind-blowing what Tuchel's done. But any other extra points to that?
I think it comes down to... I think it comes down to having multiple lines of defense and having multiple dimensions in defense. Mm. As you said, the first thing, we're counter-pressing. We're winning the ball back as soon as we lose it. There's no other way. And if we win it, we're recycling possession and we're back in control.
Yeah.
If by any chance the team evades our counter-press, we quickly transition into a very compact, sometimes 5-3-2. Now, when you have a very compact formation like that, the players are all very close to each other. You rarely see any gaps in our formation. You rarely see any spaces, and everybody knows the space they want to occupy. You can also see us defending in a 5-4-1 at times. Also, another very compact formation and a very difficult formation to break down. Another thing is that in that 3-2-5, we do have Jorginho, Kovacic, Kante, whoever is playing in midfield, Saul, protecting the defense. And if they are bypassed, we have three center backs who know how to handle 1v1 situations for the counter attack. So when you look at it on all levels, whether we're trying to defend a counter attack or we don't have any possession and we're trying to stop chances, we are very well equipped to be a difficult team to break down. We've done it with 10 men against Liverpool, and we've done it with 11 men against every other team we played against.
So yeah, really, really interesting points, Howard. And honestly, I could talk about this all day. I know it is around 12 a.m. in your kind of time zone right now. Yeah. It is very, very late. But, you know, we'll definitely have more tactical discussions in the future about different games. Maybe we'll do some tactical analysis, kind of streams a podcast. And yeah, we'll go from there. But I've really, really enjoyed this, honestly. And I'll definitely see you on this particular podcast again. But just to kind of end things off, Alan, on your particular channels, anything you like to plug, anything you'd like to say about the podcast today, it's your time now.
Again, thank you so much for having me on. I had a blast. I mean, I love talking Chelsea. And then when we get down to some of the tactics that we play, it gets even better for me. So I just wanted to say thank you for the opportunity. I would love to come back on later to discuss other things. It doesn't matter what it is. I love the podcast, and it would be a very good opportunity for me again to talk Chelsea. My YouTube channel is Let's Talk Ball with Rowan. I'm afraid I haven't been consistent. I haven't posted for a while. Hopefully soon, with the university getting a clearer schedule for university and such, I can get back to posting, hopefully. But other than that, you can find me on Twitter as well, at Ball with Rowan. I'm more consistent on that. And then again, thank you for listening to the podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. Let me know what you think, and cheers.
Thank you. And yeah, all of Alan's details will be in the description on Spotify, Apple, Google, whatever platforms you're listening to right now. You can just go down there, tap on the link, and you can find all of Alan's great videos, all of his streams, all of his tweets on Twitter. Give him a follow, give him a sub, and show some love, and really thank him for his great, great content today. And apart from that, guys, I think we've really dug deep into this particular topic. Hopefully you guys have been educated a little bit more on how Tuchel's 4-3-4-3 is very unique. And it is very, very distinct compared to other systems in Europe. But apart from that, guys, I'm going to wrap things up. Have a wonderful day. Take care. Up the Chelsea. Thank you. Keep things perfect.